Okay, am I on? Good. This is the last lecture in my little mini course on algebra, universal algebra and CSP. I'll start by asking if you had any questions arising from yesterday that you want to ask now to further derail what will likely be a chaotic lecture. Not hearing any. Just to wrap up my discussion yesterday, I mentioned the types that come from tame congruence theory, the fact that omitting certain types in the variety generated by an algebra is accompanied by a characterization in terms of satisfying a Malthus condition. And then I talked at length about omitting types one, omitting type one, and a whole long list of conditions that are equivalent either to admitting type one in the bad case or omitting type one in the good case. I stated them specifically when the algebra is the polymorphism algebra of a finite idempotent structure. I also, though, wanted to mention omitting types one and two, but I never had time to discuss that. So let me just quickly talk about, in the same situation where we have a finite idempotent structure G and A is the polymorphism algebra of the structure G, then the variety generated by this algebra can either admit one or two, at least one of them, or it can omit them both. Omits both one and two. Again, this dichotomy, either this or that, is robust and has some characterizations that, at least from the algebraic point of view, were considered to be significant. And in the idempotent case, admitting one or two is equivalent to the following. Here's one equivalent. The two elements. Well, I'll say G1, the relational structure G1 that encodes 3-set and whose polymorphism algebra is the two-element naked set, that can be PP constructed in G, or there exists a finite abelian group. I'll call it H plus, such that the structure with domain H and with one relation, which says X plus Y equals Z, that structure can be PP constructed in G. So that's one equivalent to admitting either one or two is that, yes? Yeah. Right here. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's add at least one constant. How's that? Let's add them all. Yeah, is that true? Well, it doesn't harm to add them, so I will add them. So we'll add in CA for every A and H to our structure, and that PP constructible in G. And then there are further equivalent conditions that are of more interest to algebraists, having to do with finding bad algebras, bad in the sense that they have congruences, so compatible equivalence relations, which lattice theoretically have certain or fail to have certain properties. In fact, fail to have the so-called meet semi-distributive property, and hence you sometimes see SD meet as meet semi-distributive. But never mind. On the omitting side, there is a condition that that A satisfies some specific Maltsev condition that I'm not going to tell you, involving three area operations, but unbounded number of them. But here is an improvement. A has a k area weak in U operation for almost all k. Remember, omitting type 1, one of the equivalents of omitting type 1 was having at least one weak near unanimity operation, or the structure having a weak near unanimity polymorphism of some arity, and omitting types 1 and 2 is equivalent to having weak near unanimity polymorphisms of almost all arities. All right. Now, all but finite. So for some n, there exists a k area weak near unanimity operation for all k greater than or equal to n. The bounded width conjecture now a theorem now proved. Bounded width theorem of Bartow and Kozak. Said roughly this, that that a finite idempotent structure is such that its CSP is solvable in polynomial time by a k-consistency algorithm, that k-consistency for some k, if and only if it's the variety generated by its corresponding algebra omits types 1 and 2. So for G idempotent, CSP G is in P via a k-consistency algorithm. Andre, maybe you've already said what that means. In other words, G has bounded width. Did you say that? Nope. The complement is definable in data log. Did you say that?
No.
Right. Okay. So, so this may or may not, be fully defined for you. But in any case, k-consistency algorithm solves CSP, and therefore CSP is in polynomial time, if and only if the variety generated by the polymorphism algebra of the structure omits types 1 and 2. So these are on the right-hand side of this dichotomy. If and only if the structure itself has weak NU polymorphisms of almost all arities. I mention that because the thing that should be baffling is, why should having weak NU polymorphisms of almost all arities give you an algorithm? In this case, give prove that this particular algorithm works. Okay, what is the connection between having polymorphisms, especially weak NUs, whatever they are, with having an algorithm? And what I hope to do in today's lecture is to convey a little bit of the spirit of how having polymorphisms of some, satisfying some identities, such as weak NU identities, gives rise to an algorithm. Okay. That's my goal. I will almost certainly fail terribly in that goal. But that's the direction I'm heading, and we'll see what happens. So by the end of the lecture, I hope to have shown you the use of a polymorphism, but to get there, I need to explain a bunch of things to get us to a certain setting where we can talk sensibly. And that's what I'm now going to do, is move us towards refining the setting for a CSP algorithm. So definition, let V less than be a linearly ordered set. If I have a k-tuple, let's say, x1 through xk, from V, we'll say that it is proper if it's an increasing sequence with respect to the linear order under consideration. So no pairs are equal in particular, and they are listed in increasing order. Given a finite algebra A, and with domain also A, and given an integer n at least 1, I want to define a certain relational structure, and it's simply the structure called GAN. It's going to be the structure which also has domain A, and for its relations, I just want to throw in all relations up to arity N which are compatible with the algebra. So that would be all subalgebras of A to the K, where K is at most N. Okay, so it's just a relational structure, okay, defined from the algebra in a clear way. And I'm going to be talking about the CSP problem for this particular structure over and over again today, so let's give it a notation. I'll just say CSP of the algebra A, comma, integer N. I'll just mean the CSP problem for this relational structure. Okay? Let's see. And now I finally need to define this is just invented notation. I apologize, but not too much for it. What am I going to mean by CSP sub 0 of A comma N? Well, what I'm going to mean by this is the subproblem of the CSP problem A comma N. Which only considers certain instances. There are only going to be very special instances that will be considered by the subproblem. There'll be instances expressed in the constraints version, not the homomorphism version of the problem. And it only considers instances. So an instance now would be a set of variables and then a set of constraints on those variables. I haven't yet imposed a restriction, but the restriction on the instances to be considered by the subproblem is the following. First of all, this is just a technical. We have a linear ordering on V in mind, or we fix one, and then with respect to that linear ordering, every constraint in the set of constraints, so a constraint literally is now a tuple of variables, xi1, xik, so a k-tuple of variables, and then a relation. If this is a k-tuple of variables and this is a k K-Airy relation. In the structure, which in other words is a subalgebra of A to the K, so every constraint has proper scope. Here, this is the scope, and one only allows scopes that are proper, so no variables repeated, and variables listed in increasing order. And lastly, for every k between 1 and n, what do I want to say? Every proper k-tuple from V I'll call it X, is the scope of exactly one constraint. So no business of having, some tuples that don't have any constraints or that have 10 million constraints. Yes? Yeah, okay, so, right, I haven't used that. What I mean by that is that B is a subalgebra of the kth power of the algebra A. Or, equivalently, this just means B is the domain of a subalgebra of the algebra A to the kth power. Or, equivalently, B is a K-Airy relation which is compatible with the algebra A. Yeah. Okay, so CSP 0 A comma N is some apparently complicated looking subproblem of CSP of V structure G of A N. Only certain instances are permitted, but let me draw the picture of what we're talking about. And hopefully you'll agree that it's not so bad. The idea is that instances for this subproblem all look like the following. We have a set of variables, B, and I'm assuming there's some linear ordering of these variables, and then for each variable in V, we have a constraint on, a constraint with that scope. There's exactly one constraint with scope. I'll call that, I'll call it B sub X. It's a one-Airy constraint, therefore it's a one-Airy relation, and because of the structure we're looking at, it's actually a subalgebra of A itself. It's the domain of a subalgebra of A. So for each constraint, we have a subalgebra corresponding to it. For each variable, we have a subalgebra of A corresponding to it, and then for each pair of variables, D squared, well, proper pair, X plus and Y, we have a binary constraint with scope X, Y. We have a unique binary constraint. Here it is. Here's the name for it. And it must be a binary relation, and because of what the binary relations are, it must be a subalgebra of A squared. Et cetera. For each triple, for each proper triple, how far do we go? Well, we go up to and stopping at n. So for each proper n-tuple, of variables from V to the n, we have a single constraint with that scope, and what it is the relation is a subalgebra of A to the N, and the constraints corresponding to each of these in the first case is just the requirement that X belongs to BX. The second is that XY belong to BXY, etc. And the last constraint is that the tuple X sub 1 through X sub N belong to B of X sub 1 through B of X sub N. said slightly differently, an instance of this subproblem consists of giving a set of variables, and then for each variable, for each pair of variables, each proper pair, for each proper triple, and so forth, up to each proper n-tuple, giving a subalgebra of the corresponding power of A, and the constraints then require that variable X must be in its constraint, a pair XY must be in its constraint, and so forth. Okay. So, yes. Yes, yes, it adds no structure. It simply permits me, and ultimately I'm just going to refer to the sets rather than the proper tuples that name those sets, yeah. Thanks. Okay, so lemma one. For every finite relational structure, G, with, say, domain A and a set of relations R, and with only finitely many relations, but it's going to be clear. There exists an N such that the CSP, the CSP problem for the structure is equivalent on log space reductions to the CSP problem for the polymorphism algebra of the structure and this N. And at this point, and sub zero, the subproblem that only looks at these particular kinds of instances. So every, if we're trying to understand CSP problems, we may as well, and really only need to, if we wish, look at these particular problems. That's the content of lemma one. Let me sketch the proof so you can see what's going on. What shall n be? It will be the maximum arity of the relations from G. So G has some finite set of relations, so there's some upper bound to the arities of those relations, and n will be the maximum. And then the claim is that this CSP problem is log space equivalent to this CSP problem reduced to these special instances. Okay, how do we reduce it? Well, let's see, how do we reduce it? Let's I'm now going to be talking about the relational structure that this names, so let me put script S to be all of the relations in this relational structure. So the relations of G of A n, where A is the polymorphism algebra of G. Unfortunately, the notation here completely sucks at this point, because this notation device G has nothing to do with the structure that we're talking about. This is just the relational structure with same domain as the original structure, but now whose relations are much richer, includes lots of relations. and this set of relations, again, is just the set of all B, which are subalgebras of powers of the algebra A up to and including arity N. Okay, so in this notation, if I just drop the zero and just look at Paul Alge GN. That's just GN. That's just the CSP problem of AN, which is just the CSP problem of the structure whose domain is A and whose set of relations is a set S. Okay, so I want to first note that this CSP problem and the original CSP problem are both the CSP problems of structures with the same domain, the domain A. The structure G has a set of relations R, and this structure has a set of relations S, and every structure in R is also in S. That's the first thing to note. This structure has at least as many relations as the original, because N was an upper bound to the arity of the relations of the original structure, and every relation of the original structure is certainly compatible with this algebra, the polymorphism algebra, and therefore is in the set S. Now conversely, every relation in S, is by assumption compatible with the algebra A. It's the domain of a subalgebra of a power of A. But A is just the polymorphism algebra of the original structure G. And by the theorem, if a relation is compatible with all of the polymorphisms of the structure G, then the relation is PP definable in G. That is from the relations R. So the relations of G, that is the set R, and the relations of this richer structure, that is S, they're included in one direction and PP defined in the other direction. So they simulate each other. Both sets are finite. Both R and F are finite. So the CSP problems for the structure with relations R on the one hand, and the structure with relations S on the other, our log space equivalent. And this is just our original structure G. And this is this problem is just that problem here. It's the thing that we're trying to reduce the original to, but yet not adding the zero to it. And so that's the easy step. Now it remains to reduce this problem, which is that problem, remains to reduce the CSP of A, N, that's this CSP, to the subproblem CSP 0, A, N, and to show that we can reduce to only having to consider instances where scopes of constraints are always proper, and there's exactly one constraint for each proper tuple. How to do that? Well, it's tedious and not very interesting. Shall I work through it? Good. There's no big idea. You just do the obvious thing. That's the big idea. You just do the obvious thing. I'll start it. Why not? So let's take an instance to this CSP problem and produce an instance of this CSP problem. Okay, that is equivalent. So let's say we have a set of variables and a set of constraints. I'll use capital Pi for the set of constraints. Variables. Constraints. So let's let this be an instance of CSP A-N. Okay, again, what that means is that all this means is that this is just a normal CSP instance. The relations can be any subalgebras of A to the K, for K up to and including N. So those are the permitted relations that can appear in constraints. There's lots of relations that were permitted. They're just governed by the sub powers of A, but there's no other conditions imposed on what this instance looks like. So I want to build an equivalent instance of the subproblem. So what do I do? Well, let's see, what do? While there exists a constraint of the form xi1, xik, r, while there exists a constraint in our set of constraints with the scope, call it x bar, with the scope improper. That doesn't make sense. Can't talk about a scope being proper or improper unless I have a linearly ordering of the set of variables. Okay, let's just go back. Fix a linear ordering of the variable set. Now, while I have a constraint with improper scope, well, let's fix it and make it turn it into something with proper scope. Case one, maybe there are a pair of variables in the scope that are repeated. Okay, that's not technically permitted, so suppose I have a scope looking like x, I'll drop the fancy indices, say x1 through xf, and then here in the teeth spot, I have xt, but it's actually the same variable, xs, xk. Suppose this is my scope. What do I do? Well, I replace the constraint with a slightly less improper one. The one that you get by, first of all, deleting the teeth variable from the scope. So x1, xs, and then where I would have had xs again, I just go right onto xt plus 1. So it's a new scope. And now I have to put a new relation, because this is now a tuple of length k minus 1. And here I put the k minus 1 relation, the k minus 1 area relation, which I'll call r superscript s equals t. This is k minus 1 area. And what is it? It's the set of k minus 1 tuples in the domain of the algebra, such that if I insert a copy of the s coordinate, here's as, at at minus 1, after that, if I insert as again and then continue, that thing should actually be something in R. So this is now a k minus 1 area relation. This is not a relation probably of the original structure that we started the lemma with, but it is a relation, so note, this new relation is still going to be compatible with the algebra A, and its arity hasn't gotten too big, so it's in our set. So this is a perfectly fine new constraint, and we replace the original with this. Yeah, okay, and that's going to be the idea for this or similar tricks we do to convert every improper constraint into proper constraints at the expense of moving away from the relations in the original structure just now using more arbitrary relations, which at least have the virtue of being subalgebras of the algebra. Maybe I should mention one last thing about what one needs to do here. Well, actually, let me mention several things. First of all, if I form this new relation, it might be empty. Oh, crap, because I'm not permitting empty relations. Okay, well, if empty, R, S equals T, empty, then we just stop the whole algorithm and stop and answer no. Because that's a witness to the original instance being inconsistent. Okay, but let's suppose that we haven't stopped. At the end of making all of the tuples proper, so ultimately all constraints in our instance will have proper scope. We're not done. There could be some proper tuples that are not the scope of any constraint, or there also could be proper tuples that are the scopes of two or more constraints. So what do we do to fix that? Well, if x is, if we have a proper tuple of the appropriate length, but is not the scope of any constraint, do we give up and go home and say, damn, I don't know what to do? No. We just add the constraint, add a new constraint with x as its scope, and what is its length, k? So we'll just throw in all of a to the k as the relation. Again, this is one of the permitted relations. It's a subalgebra of a to the k, so it's fine to add it. And it doesn't actually impose any further constraint on variables, so adding it doesn't harm anything. And then finally, now that every proper tuple is the scope of at least one relation, we now need to make it also the scope of at most one relation. Given a proper tuple, proper x in v to the k, list all the constraints, having x as a scope, there's at least one, and but there might be more than one, or m, let's say, from all the constraints that we have in our set pi. All right, each of these relations is a k-ary relation, that is a subalgebra of a to the k, and we replace these, we replace these m many constraints with a single constraint with scope x, and the relation, which is the intersection of the I-ary relations. Small detail, that this could be empty. If empty, again, stop and answer no. But if non-empty, then we will have succeeded finally in producing a new instance, this time an instance of CXP sub 0, having all the right properties, and which is equivalent, in fact, has exactly the same solutions as the original instance of CSPG. Okay, so that's the idea of this first reduction lemma 1. All right. Okay, so it was mentioned that, you know, is the purpose of the linear ordering on V just so we can talk about subsets, scopes being subsets, and the answer was yes, and let me just now note that. So an instance of CSP0 AN now can also be written without, you know, sort of disposing of the linear ordering on the set of variables in the following way. We have, again, still a set of variables, and then constraints. Originally, it would be one constraint, exactly one constraint for each proper tuple. Now, one constraint for each subset of the variable set of size n. So for each element of V, we have a constraint x, bx. So one of these for each x in the variable set. And then for each two element, for each pair of variables, we have a constraint on the pair of, on the set x, y of variables. I'll just write b sub x, y for this constraint, but a constraint for each pair of variables. Etc. Basically what's happening is for each I, for each subset of the variable set, an empty and of size at most n, we have a single constraint, too low I bet. We have a constraint which is on the set I of variables, and the constraint itself is a subalgebra of A to the card I. Hard to see, yeah, okay. I can't raise that board. It's fixed, so, but I'll stop writing any lower. Yeah. Not completely, no. But it is, because, I mean, first of all, it's not, I'm not saying it's log space uniform in the algebra A and N. I mean, A and N are fixed. Okay, and so there are just a fixed finite number of subalgebras of powers of A, and so our hardware knows all of it, knows everything about all combinations of them. Okay, and the rest can be done log space. Okay, one of two. For every finite algebra A, and for every N, there exists a finite algebra B, such that, first of all, this weird CSP sub zero of A comma N is, I'll just claim log space reducible to the corresponding CSP zero problem for B comma 2, this is the improvement, and A and B as algebras satisfy exactly the same Maltsev conditions. In particular, yes. Okay, where did I write that? As a scope? Okay, then I throw a constraint in having it as a scope. Which one? Well, it's here at the top of this board here. Add a new constraint, which has X as its scope, and the relation constraining X is just the full kth power. So it's just an artificial device, but I add that just to make sure I have at least one with that scope. Sorry? It's like the empty intersection. Yeah. And in fact, if you're, I didn't actually need to do this because in forming the intersection, as long as we acknowledge that empty intersections are meaningful, then that would give me a good game. Yeah. Does that answer your question? Good. Any other questions? Yeah.
Are we saying
eventually
that A and B have the same,
Well, yeah, I could say that. I could let A be a signed algebra, and then I would say for every signed algebra, there's just an algebra B of the same signature, and then this would still hold, and this would be that A and B generate the same variety. For everyone. Yeah, absolute everyone, okay. Yeah. So, from a certain perspective, A and B are just as good as each other, or really the perspective is, if you're trying to show that for every, idempotent relational structure whose polymorphism algebra omits types 1 and 2, it's equivalent to satisfies some particular Malthus condition, okay, something holds. Okay, this reduction would be useful because, I, in general, can reduce an arbitrary instance of CSP to one like of this form, and I haven't changed the polymorphisms at this point. Okay, now I've passed from this to this. I'm changing the domain. I'm not claiming the same domain or anything like that. But the new thing at least will satisfy the same Malthus condition, so it also will have satisfied the Malthus condition remitting types 1 and 2. And so if I can prove whatever I'm trying to prove for this CSP, that doesn't necessarily show that the thing I'm trying to prove is true for this one, but it usually does. Okay. In particular, if I'm trying to show existence in a complexity class, then this would give this also in the same complexity class. All right, so, well, it is what it is, but it's a useful trick to know. And how does it go? Proof. Well, what's B going to be? B is just going to be a power of A, namely to the n over 2 power, well, precisely the ceiling, n over 2. crap. Yeah, I actually don't want to use B, because B is always going to be my relations in an instance. So if you'll permit me, I'm not going to use B here, I'm going to use, say, D. Just to eliminate one potential source of confusion. D, then, will be just this power of 2. And what I need to show is that, okay, I'm given any CSP0 instance for algebra A with scopes going up to arity N, I can produce an equivalent CSP0 instance for the algebra D using just unary and binary constraints. And this is a simple little reduction that I've seen a number of times, and either due to Bartow-Kozik or maybe McKenzie or maybe well-known to all computer scientists. But anyway, everyone should know it. How does it go? I'm given an instance for CSP0AN. So this instance now is a set of variables V, and then a subalgebra B sub I of the appropriate power of A for every subset I of the variable set of cardinality at most n. So there's a kind of alternative way of formulating an instance of CSP0 would look like this. Given that thing, how am I going to create an instance of CSP D2 that's equivalent to it? Well, we do the following. We put V star to be the set of all subsets of V of size n over 2. Okay, so non-empty. Oh, well, obviously it's non-empty. Okay, so this is going to be our new variable set. The new variables are going to be sets of old variables. Okay, now I need to define unary and binary constraints on these new variables. So unary constraints, okay, for a set in, for an individual element of B star that is a subset of variables, original variables of size. Anyway, I need a constraint. I'll call it D sub, I'll call it B star sub I. This is a unary constraint on the algebra D. What shall I use? Well, how about just the N over 2 array constraint coming from the original instance. This is, after all, a subalgebra of A to the I. Well, but that's, or A to the card I if you want, which is exactly D. So, okay. So the nonsense are easy, but in any case, if I let K be N over 2, then the original K array constraints give us one array constraint for the new thing. And similarly, if I take two elements of V star, N over 2 element sets of original variables, I need to define a binary constraint. A binary constraint over D, and it will be defined to be the set of pairs A bar B bar and B cross B, such that there exists a C bar in, well, what I want to do is I want to take the union of I and J and look at the constraint corresponding to the constraint from the original problem that corresponds to the union, and look for a tuple C bar in it, which has the property that its restriction to I is A bar, and its restriction to J is B bar. Technically speaking, this might not, like, if N is odd, this might be a set that's too big to be one of the constraints of the original problem, too big by one, so we'll just assume it is even. But anyway, well, it is what it is, and I claim this works. Claim the original instance has a solution. VBI has a solution if and only if V star B star I and B star IJ have a solution. And except for this little minor glitch, it's also an instance of CSP 0 of D. Yes? Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah. I told myself, don't forget I... yeah, no, this is wrong, okay. So how do I fix it? Okay, well, by changing the definition. No, this can't be right. What one has to do is look at all subsets of I, okay, and you put into this tuple, you put into this relation all... I tuples, which not only belong to B sub I, but for every subset of I, are such that their projection on the subset belongs to B sub J. Okay, so this is actually technically wrong, completely bogus. This can be fixed. No, even that can't be fixed. But something like this works, okay? So, shall I write it down, what actually works? Homework, yes. Fix this. The not zero case is simply saying that I have exactly one constraint on every individual variable and exactly one constraint on every pair of distinct variables. Now, that's what the sub-zero constraint is, and that I've done. What's not true is this claim of equivalence, that the one system, that the new system captures the old system. Actually, the new system does not capture the old system. I'm only paying attention to constraints of size n over 2. So how could that possibly? I'm throwing everything else away. So one has to actually improve this by taking into account not only the constraints imposed on I in the original, but on all subsets of I. And similar thing here. But then it can be fixed so that it is consistent, and this is essentially the reduction to binary constraints.
What about the matchup condition? The two things are supposed to be
the same matchup conditions, yeah. Let's say satisfy the same identities. It's good enough. So for example, if A has an operation that satisfies, okay, so we're here for the I'm not sure how much to say, but if A has, let's say, a three area operation f of x, y, z satisfying, say, f of x, x, y equals y, and f of x, y, y equals x, then so does b, and vice versa. Okay, so this is a Malthus condition, the claim of the existence of some operations that satisfy some equations. Okay, and the claim is that every such thing, if A has one, then so does B, and vice versa. Yes? Yeah, because I'm not doing types, signatures. no, but you're right. Yeah, B is just a subpower. So thinking of A as a signed algebra, it's obvious that B and A satisfy the same identities, and identities capture the Malthus condition. Thank you. Okay, well, all of this was so that I could draw some pictures. Okay, so let's now consider an instance of, let's go back to some algebra A, CSP 0 of A, comma 2. A is some finite algebra. What does an instance look like? Well, again, we have a set of variables. For each variable, for each x and v, we have a constraint. Which is a subalgebra of A. The constraint is that variable X must belong to subalgebra BX. And then for each distinct pair of variables, X and Y, we have a binary constraint, where the binary constraint is a subalgebra of A squared. And it says that the pair XY must belong to the subalgebra. And that's it. That's exactly what the instance looks like. I mean, informally, it's what it is. And because that's what it is, we can draw pictures. Initially, the picture will look something like this. Let's say we have a variable X, variable Y, variable Z. Above each variable, let's draw a copy of the algebra A. The algebra A again. The algebra A. The A is the set of values where we want to interpret the variables. Now, the constraint on X, B sub X is a subalgebra. So maybe this is B sub X, and the constraint is that X must have value in here. B sub Y could be a different subalgebra. Maybe it's right here. B sub Y, and here's B sub Z. So the first constraints, the inner constraints, say that the valid variables x, y, and z must live in the corresponding constraints. The binary constraints, so let's look at b of x, comma y. B of x, comma y, need some colors, is a subalgebra of A squared. So it's a binary relation on A cross A, and we can picture the pairs in it by, like, as you may have already seen in lectures, by edges from the one copy over x to the one copy over y. Here's maybe what bxy looks like. Maybe this point and this point is a pair in bxy. Maybe this point, that point is a pair. Maybe this point is a pair, and this point, that point, so something like that. So the set of ordered pairs that I've written in green would be the relation b of x, comma y, some subalgebra of A squared, and it's forming some edges between A here and A here. Now, this binary constraint says that in addition to x having to live here and y having to live here, the pair x, y has to be one of the green edges. That's all that it says. We have a corresponding, I think it was a graph, from y to z, so there must be some edges from byz. Maybe that's the set of ordered pairs of byz. There's a third set of edges between x and z, corresponding to bxz, and so forth. For every variable, we have a picture of A, we have a subalgebra designated, and we have a set of edges between every pair of pictures. That's what an instance of this subproblem looks like, okay? All right. I can't imagine how painful this is for the Czech universal algebraists in the room right now. Okay. Now, definition. So probably good if I did this definition on a different board. Here. So such an instance of CSP 0A, 2 is called a 1-2 system. If it has properties nicer than the example that I've just drawn here. If what needs to be the case is that for all x and y, variables x and y, the binary constraint bxy needs to be contained in bx cross by. So, first of all, every edge in the constraint bxy must start in bx and end in by. It's not what I've drawn here. And secondly, I'll write it first. So for every a in bx, there exists a b in by, such that the pair AB is in the constraint BXY. It just says every element of BX can go to some element of BY by a green edge. That's again fails in the picture, but and then vice versa. And conversely, for every B in BY, there exists an A in BX. Okay, so you can always. So the condition, I mean, a 1-2 system, is that, first of all, the green arrows live where they should, and second of all, that is in the corresponding unary relations, and second of all, you can always move from one of the unary constraints to another unary constraint by a binary edge. So better picture, that is a picture of a 1-2 system, we've got, the better picture now says, well, we don't need to actually have the copies of the algebra A, because all of the action is happening in the unary relations. So over X, I'll just put BX. And then over Y, I'll put BY. And over Z, I'll put BZ. That's all that matters now. And all of our edges in BXY go between here, and we can always go from a point here to a point there, or from a point here, we can always go to a point there, and so forth. Could be multiple edges, but we can always leave and go to another unary constraint and vice versa. And similarly over here, we can always go like this. Might be some edges of this kind. There will be, and that's BYZ. Don't forget, there's some edges between X and Z. All of the points must go somewhere. So somewhere, the edges give the binary constraints. Okay, terminology. These blobs, BX, BY, BZ, are called the potatoes. I don't know why that got started, but it apparently is stuck. We always, from here on, call these potatoes. And this is the reduction to potatoes. Okay, well, I haven't reduced to 1-2 systems, but claim, I should write this down. So claim, the 1-2 consistency algorithm reduces CSP0 A2 to the subproblem consisting only of 1-2 system instances of CSP A2. You run 1-2 consistency, which shrinks a given instance. If I would throw away green edges, if they go outside the unary constraints, that reduces this. But if something is in one of the BXs but not attached to a green edge, then it gets thrown out, and one keeps reducing until either you have run out of, either you arrive at an empty constraint, which case the original had no solution, or else you stabilize finally at a 1-2 subsystem of the original instance. So without loss of generality, if we're looking at instances of CSP A0, 2, we may as well assume we're looking at 1-2 system instances. You take what they are. Yeah, it stabilizes at relations that are compatible. Well, okay, no. Maybe we should be careful. One has to do it right. You don't simply throw out one edge. Okay, you take the restriction of BX, Y, well, you intersect it with BX cross BY. The intersection, I mean, you've thrown out many edges at once, and at that point, you're still a subalgebra. Yeah.
But after you run the algorithm, you no longer necessarily have any consistency zero, because
you may have thrown out. Sorry. this just says I have one unary constraint for every variable and one binary constraint for every pair of values. That's all that it says. Okay. And now that you have a picture like this, as Libor says, you start walking. Okay. The sophisticated algorithms that I unfortunately have no time to present involve starting somewhere and walking through potatoes. Okay. In patterns and doing some non-trivial combinatorics of what happens. I don't have time to explain. I don't think I'm going to have time to explain any of that. But what I do want to do is claim what's true and then prove something weaker. So (clears throat) So I need stronger, I need to just mention for the record, stronger notions of consistency than just this 1-2 consistency that's represented in the definition of a 1-2 system. So definition. Here's the definition. Okay. So a 1-2 system is, I don't actually know if this is the right jargon, but I'll just say it this way, is 2-3 consistent if it has a stronger property than just the fact that you can always walk everywhere. Okay. The property of a 2-3 system is the following. Whenever I take an edge, whenever I take three vertices, say X, Y, and W, and an edge between two of the corresponding potatoes, there exists a point, say A and B, there exists a point C in the third potato, such that the constraint from X to W is an edge from A to C, includes an edge from A to C, and the constraint from Y to W contains constraint from B to C. In other words, so that A, B, and C form a triangle with respect to the three binary constraints. So a 1-2 system is 2-3 consistent if for all X, Y, W, and V, every edge in BXY can be extended to a, can be extended to the potato BW to a triangle. By that I mean using edges from BXY from X to Y, BXW from X to W, and BYW from Y to W. Every edge can be extended to a triangle in the picture. That's what it means to be 2-3 consistent. And you can also talk about 2-4 consistency. If you wanted to, 2-4 consistency would be that every edge, for every four sets of variables, every edge extends to a 4 clique of the relevant potatoes and edge sets. Every edge extends to a 4 clique, etc. We can talk about 2k consistency for any fixed value of k. And again, for each k, for each fixed k, so for any fixed k, we can assume that instances to CFP 0 A2 well, our 1-2 systems and our 2K consistent. We can assume that at the expense of having to run some overhead of running the 2K consistency algorithm to reduce an instance to such a thing. Yeah. 1-2 consistency is that you are a 1-2 system. Okay. Okay. No. Not necessarily consistent. Well, the claim is that given any 1-2 consistent instance, we can run an algorithm which either finds a contradiction, in which case you know automatically the original instance was inconsistent, or else it stabilizes at a consistent 2K consistent subsystem, okay, equivalent to the original in the sense that they have both have the same solutions. No longer log space. yeah. Now, right. Okay, and bounded width just means, okay, so So now this is the starting point. So we may as well assume you fix your favorite k, like 3, okay, and assume that we're now only going to care about 2-3 consistent pictures of that form. You have to decide, still, do they have solutions? We still have the CSP staring at us in the face, okay? And the 2K consistency algorithm for CSP, well, CSP A2 has bounded width. Or the structure underlying this thing has bounded width if there exists a K such that this is all you need to do, nothing more. Once you reduce to a 2K consistent system, if it's still consistent, then the original, then it has a solution. So if every 2K consistent system has a solution. No work needed. Yes. Yeah, it is strange, isn't it? Yeah, I should. So this isn't technically right. This is if, okay. And it's not only if. Put even more informally, we have bounded width if reducing to 2K consistent subsystems is the end of the story. And now, you know, there's no more work needed to do in order to solve the CSP. Okay. And the theorem is theorem, or some quotient, suppose A, so idempotents, a variety omits types 1 and 2, types 1 and 2, then the CSP0, well, CSPA2, has bounded width. More precisely, every 2-3 consistent system instance of CSP0 A2 has a solution. So the 2-3 consistency algorithm suffices to solve CSP A,2 in polynomial time. That's the theorem. Right. And the proof of the theorem uses the fact that if a variety generated by an algebra omits types 1 and 2, then it has polymorphisms. It has weak and near unanimity polymorphisms. What I wanted to do, I may still have time, is sketch a proof of something weaker. Here's a sketch of the proof that if A has a 3-ary near unanimity operation. This is a much stronger hypothesis. Okay, near unanimity just means, remember that f of, some 3 variables, f of x, x, y, and f of x, y, x, and f of y, x, x. Not only must be equal, but must equal the majority value. This is a majority operation. Let me show you the easy proof, assuming that the algebra has a majority operation, or equivalently, that the relations forming constraints have a majority polymorphism. How does the proof go? Okay, well, I need to show that if I have a 2-3 consistent instance, then that instance has already a solution. Okay? So let's consider a 2-3 instance, 2-3 consistent instance. So I have potatoes. Probably many. And I have edges between potatoes. And the edges have a property, have the 2-3 consistent property that, well, there are 1-2 systems, so every vertex can go to any potato by an edge. And secondly, any edge between potatoes and any third potato is such that there exists some point, some third point, which is a triangle with respect to the three edge relations. Okay, I want to claim, I want to now bootstrap up to stronger and stronger claims. So claim every triangle for every triangle between potatoes x, y, and z, dx, dy, dz, and for every fourth potato bw, the triangle can be extended to a four-clique through w. So there must exist some point here which is connected to all three of the vertices from the original triangle. That's claim one. And basically, once you see that this can be done, then the same argument will show that every four-clique can be extended to a five-clique, and ultimately you'll get a clique all the way through the whole instance, and the clique is your solution. Okay, so why is it that every triangle can be extended to a four-clique? Well, let's pick four potatoes. Here's bx, by, bz, bw. So let's pick a triangle in x, y, and z. Let's say a, b, c. Okay, now I'm going to use 2-3 consistency, which says that every edge can be extended to a triangle. Seems kind of weird, but using a different potato. So for example, edge AB and potato W. 2-3 consistency says A and B can be extended to a triangle through some point in W. So let's call this point R. So this must exist in R in BW such that I have a triangle through A, B, and R. Okay. Now let's take a look at the edge AC and potato W. Again, 2-3 consistency says that the edge AC must be able to go through a triangle through BW, so there must exist an S in BW, say right here, S, and it forms a triangle with the edge AC. So I've got an edge here, an edge here, and an edge here. I'm destroying what I had before where one color represented one edge relation. Now I'm picking colors for triangles. Yeah, sorry about that. And then finally, if I take the third edge of the triangle, BC, the 2-3 consistency says there must be a third point, T, which is connected to both C and B. It would be super really nice if R, S, and T were all the same point, because then I'd have my clique. But there's no reason to assume that. Luckily, we have a polymorphism. So let F be our majority operation, our three-ary near unanimity operation of the algebra A. F preserves all constraints. Because it's one of the operations of A, and the constraints are all compatible with the operations of A. They're all subalgebras of A or of A squared. Okay. So let's apply F. Let's let U be the value of F at R, S, and T. Now, R, S, and T all belong to the unary constraint BW. F preserves that constraint, so U also belongs to BW. So F preserves BW, so the element U, again, is another element somewhere in potato BW. And now I want to show that this is the point that connects to all of A, B, and C in the various edges. So I'll just show one of the connections. Claim, I'll show that A, U is in the constraint B, X, W. How do I do it? Well, I'm going to use the fact that F preserves X, B, X, W. I'm sorry, so somehow I'm going to use the fact that this operation F preserves X, W. So I need to start with some edges that are in from BX to BW and apply F to them. What edges do I have from BX to BW? I have two edges. So I have the edge from A to R in BXW. That's the yellow edge. I have the edge from A to F in BXW. In order to apply F, I need a third edge. F is three areas, so I need three edges to apply F to. Okay. I only have two. I also want to have an edge that ends in T, clearly, because I want to apply F to things and get F of RST in the second coordinate. Okay, but I don't have an edge to T coming from BX. But there has to be some edge. Because we're looking at a 1-2 system, there is something over here, some P, which has an edge to T. So by 1-2 consistency, or by 1-2 system, we can pick some P in BX, so that X, T is an edge. Now these are the three edges. Now I apply P, T. Now I apply F. Applying F, the resulting thing will be an edge, and the resulting thing is, well, it's F of AAP in the first coordinate and F of RST in the second coordinate. And this thing is again, an edge. Now the thing in the second coordinate is just U. That's U. And the thing in the first coordinate is A, because the identity says F of X, X, Y is always X. So we have the edge from A to U, and the other identities give the other edges. The other identities for the majority for the three-area NU operation give the other edges. I wish I had a lot more time, because this is just the start, but I don't, so I'll stop. Any parting shots? Yes. In the omitting types 1 and 2. I'm sorry. Just this much, you mean? Just for the... Oh, if you just have a weak NU, a W and U, I'm sorry. No, we don't know yet what to do if you just have one weak NU.
No.
Okay, well, yes, there is a reference. Yeah, it's a paper by Libor, Barto, and Marcin Kozik. Yeah, it's the LCMS? Well, what's the title? Bounded width? Bounded width and CSP or something like that. The downside is that there are too many papers with these two authors. But it's 2010, I think. Okay, and it starts from the assumption that you have weekend use of all but silent miniarities. Okay, but then it's a complete proof. Oh no, it's completely more complicated. Yeah, I mean, I mean, it is absolutely more. Yeah. Well, it's a different idea. It's a different idea. Well, no, there's so many other ideas that are part of it. Yeah. Yeah, I was prepared to actually explain a couple places where having weekend use are used, and it's not anything as simple as this. Okay, it's quite different. Quite different, but yes. Yeah. 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 Maybe I'll just add that. What this argument shows is that when you have a majority operation, every edge extends to a solution. Yeah, and that's not going to be the case in general. Okay, in general, what you have to do is you start off with this picture, and you need and the strategy to prove it has a solution. In essence, is to say, well, I can shrink some potato. There's some potato somewhere I can shrink, and create a smaller system, but still having properties. Inheriting properties from the original, which I can then continue to pass on to further shrinkings. All of the work is in showing that there is a way to always shrink it until you finally end up with every potato consisting of a single point. In that case, we have an edge, because it's a 1-2 system, to every other potato. Well, it's always just that one point, so it's a clique in the from the original thing. But it's all about shrinking. Absorbing sets, if you've heard it mentioned, are one of the keys to that. There's some combinatorial ingenuities that involve walking around, just giving them this big endless cycle and just saying, let me just spin around for about 10 years, okay? But look, I ended up back where I started somehow by magic. We can use, well, amongst other things, we can use are used to show that if I look at any pair of potatoes, and neither of one can be shrunk in the most obvious way, then that imposes a severe restriction on what the edge relation between them can look like. So that's there's a key, some algebra that's done using weekend use. And then having infinitely many weekend use is actually used to produce some other special weekend use that having all but finitely many weekend use gives some special weekend use, and they are used to show that you can't ever get stuck, that if the obvious ways to shrink don't work, then there's some clever way to shrink that is guaranteed to work. So I mean that's I've oversimplified it too much, but you're right. What I've presented does not convey how we can use or actually use. Okay, we're done. Thanks.